KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin, Corey Majors, the famous Mike Vasek, and Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's waste no time and get right into the Mavericks. Go ahead and give me number five, please.
Dinwiddie. Marshall went to a vacated area. A catch and shoot. Quinn Grimes. Splash. Timeout, Minnesota.
Now, I know normally we would play the Luka, but we heard that in the cross. And it is true that Luka hit the three that felt like it closed the door in the game. That was the first three I believe he made in the game. He's still shooting too much for my estimation, but I think that was always going to be a process. I think it's ridiculous to be like, he'll step on the court in game one and be like, yep, got it. Let's start passing.
I will say that this isn't fair to him because he's a million times better than the T-shaker, Antoine Walker. Okay.
Text in what that stands for.
No, he was just mixing his tea up.
That's not what he's
shaking his boobies because he made a shot for the, you know, one out of four. Shake my boobies.
So not the Boston Tea Party. Gotcha.
It could be.
But Luka is having very Antoine Walker like box scores in how many times he shoots and how many times he scores. Like Antoine Walker, like average 20 a game. I'm like, you take 24 shots. That is a horrible percentage. Like your teammate. Dirk Nowitzki takes 15 shots and averages 26. Do you see the difference? And Antoine's like, no, booby shake.
God, it's going to be a long day.
He started early, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Oh, you know what else I can do? I can buy apartments and become a slumlord.
What? I don't remember that.
Oh, Antoine Walker, slumlord, Chicago.
All right.
Okay.
I did not know that either.
Look into that. I don't really know. Okay. But what I want
to... Interesting, huh? Interesting way to start this.
That is an interesting way to start. Now, there's a lot of things that we can break down from this game, and I know some people had some concerns about the usage rate of Klay Thompson, but what I want to start with is you talked a lot in the past, Mike, about the scheduled loss. This felt like an early potential scheduled loss in terms of you had to do the back-to-back. You had to travel from Dallas to Minnesota to do the back-to-back, and Minnesota's a damn fine team. Mavs are underdog by 5.5 points. This felt like a scheduled loss. And I'm not going to lie. The first couple of minutes of the third quarter, I thought we were about to see that play out.
Well, and didn't it feel like, Corey, the revenge of Anthony Edwards as he gets 24 in the first quarter and he
was
felt
on pace
like,
to get 100.
I want to show, well, he's only going to get 96.
You're right.
Yeah.
We'll put Corey in his place.
Stupid math.
Yeah, but... Corey, I know that you're a big Anthony Edwards fan. I think he's a great, great basketball player too, but it felt like that first quarter or early on in the game, Anthony Edwards is going to show I've matured in the offseason and I'm ready. The team that destroyed me in the playoffs, I'm ready to show I am here to destroy you. So it did feel like in that first quarter at least that, oh my gosh, Anthony Edwards is not going to let us win.
You know, I do, there's another part of that. The loss to Phoenix, do you think that made a, hey, let's make sure we get this, you know, let's make sure we get this one back here. I don't know.
That's a good question. I guess I don't necessarily think that as much as,
and I for a second, I'm sorry. I also thought that was the first of the back-to-back. That's the Jazz. But the other part though, they made it competitive. Anthony Edwards comes out competitive. And I think that the guys on the other side, the Mavericks, they're like, I got too much pride. Mike, you've been asking that question of are they going to take it seriously? Last night, they looked like they were. I mean, late in the fourth quarter, I know the game got closer, but late in the fourth quarter, they were fighting their butts off. And it starts with Gafford and Lively, and then it just trickles out through the rest of those guys. And when Kai's having the type of third and fourth quarters that he's having, and you know you can get that whenever you're getting that kind of play out of him, you see a team that looks like they want it, man.
And I want to throw this out for just one second, because people might ask or might not be familiar with what we're saying when we say take the regular season seriously. We talk about that. This is not only a Mavs problem by any stretch of the imagination. You see it all across the NBA is let's gear it for the playoffs, gear it for the playoffs. And this is the classic game where you could have been like, hey, it's back-to-back. We're on the road. It's going to be tough. Like, let's get ready for Thursday or whatever the next one is. And maybe we're not going to win this game, or we're going to find out about midway through the second quarter that this might not be our night. This felt like a regular season game where they dug in and picked up a win that I don't normally think the Mavericks win this game.
No, I am with you on it. And it was I don't want to say surprising, but the Mavericks elevated their intensity where we saw, just like Corey was saying, a few nights ago in Phoenix. This wasn't the back-to-back Phoenix and then this one, but they didn't really have much intensity against Utah. Like, they beat Utah because they're just way they're more better. Talented. Yeah. They did not beat Utah because of execution or because of much of anything besides, we just have a lot more talent and more depth, and it ended up through 48 minutes playing out that you could beat a team you're probably 20 points better than beating them by
approximately
10.
Not going to happen against Minnesota.
Right, so, you're going to lose by 20. If you come out with the same energy against Utah, you're going to lose that one by 20 easily. So it's weird. It's only the fourth game, but very proud of that win as a Mavericks fan.
Can I tell you why I don't think it matters as much that it's only the fourth game? Because I know we have said a lot of, it's only the first game, second game, third game. How many games do you need to pick up that maybe you wouldn't have won last year? Five? Between four and six? This is one. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's what I like, because I think, how many wins did you have last year? How many wins do you need to get to probably be in the first or second seed? I would argue pretty strongly that you need 4 to 6 more victories that maybe they wouldn't normally pick up. They just got one. Now, there's surely going to be some games along the way that you're like, what the hell happened there? Like,
and they're going to do this. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
But you've picked up one, and I think you need to get to 4 to 6. And so I think that's a big deal.
One of the other things I noticed last night, and it wasn't a lot, but it was better. Last year, P.J. Washington against the Celtics was bringing the ball up the court, and we're like, don't let him do that anymore. We don't want to see that anymore.
Yeah, especially against pressure. Like, Drew Holiday, please stop it. He's going to steal it, and he did.
And and last night, I felt like, and so far I've been watching, and he brings it up maybe 10 times throughout the game, but it's enough to get the ball out of the hands of some of Luka and Kyrie and give them that spell that they need, and it's a different look. And he looks more comfortable. They said, here's what we want you to focus on in the offseason. He looks more comfortable doing that. That combined with his defense and, you know, occasional hot shooting, and he's continuing to grow in what the Mavericks are asking of
him. And P.J. Washington?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm with you. I think he's going to be an inconsistent player, right? Agree, the other night against Phoenix, he goes back to like 2 points or 4 points, and you're just like, this is just who he is. That's what makes him a role player and not a borderline all-star, is he can have 15 to 20 duds on you where you're just like, you have to live with like, what happened to P.J. Washington? And he's going to have 15 to 20 games where he's awesome, and you're like, dude, if he plays like that, I don't know if we're going to lose with the rest of the talent you have on the team. And it's those other 40 games where he's like, solid role player, love him, wish he was the guy I saw 2 nights ago, but thank God he wasn't the guy I saw 5 nights ago.
Yeah.
I forget where I was going here, but...
I got a place.
You're on a roll. Yeah.
I will say, with Luka playing this bad to start the year, you do have to be somewhat, I guess you've had two games that are against teams that we don't expect to make the playoffs in San Antonio and Utah.
Correct.
But to be 3-1 and Luka not playing very good basketball, or at least inconsistent, to be nice, if you want me to say, no, Luka's the best. All right, but he's 10 of 27 last night. Luckily, he made an 80-foot three-pointer.
He was 1 of 8 from 3,
But that one was the one.
And the one he made was closer to half court than the three-point line, and it was a huge three to go up by 8.
You love what he said afterwards when he looked at that fan and said, that's what I effing do. And it's like he's just doing the same thing he did last time. He was there with those daggers.
Yeah, he should have booby shake, because that was definitely an Antoine Walker night from 3 again.
The one thing, I was listening to them talk, and they were talking about the luxury of Lively and Gafford, and having those two, and just they're like talking like we have 48 minutes. They can just be on the court and they can just rotate those guys. They never get tired. And almost immediately after they say that, Gafford hits his knee and takes off, immediately takes off. I was like, oh my gosh, you have this awesome luxury. And what is this team if he's not? I know Lively's good, but you change whenever if you lose one of those guys.
I agree, because Lively can max out it. I mean, like, let's go crazy. He can max out at 34 minutes, and that's probably more than you would want to see on a consistent basis. That still gives you like a good quarter plus of a void. Were you concerned because that was probably a real injury? Versus when someone else looked like they got hurt on the team and they're like, I don't know.
Luka's the boy who cried wolf. And this is where
that's
people,
fair, right?
People who are just complete We love Luka.
He's
I want to make sure everybody listening knows everybody here loves Luka.
Yes.
But he is such a faker when it comes to injuries. Then when he is really hurt, we don't know. You don't know. As a Luka lover.
Yes.
The man could not walk. He needed people to drag him to the back to get x-rays and MRIs, and we thought his season might be done with. Because people who act the way he acted, it's a major thing. My wife was watching with me, not that she's a knee doctor, but she's like, because she watched the replay. She's like, I don't know, maybe a meniscus tear or something, because nothing twisted bad.
But she was concerned.
But she is like, the way he's acting.
It looked like Diggs, right?
Yes.
Where nothing really happened. So what happened?
Yeah. And so it's just tough with Luka. If he's laying on the ground and looks like his life is over, he might just be faking it and he'll be fine 5 minutes later. 15 minutes later, he could run up and down a court, but if things didn't go his way, then he limped a little bit. It was amazing if things went
his
way.
Very Tiger Woods-esque.
Yeah, so anyways, I love him, but man, what a faker. And it's just no way we can know as a fan of the Mavs and Luka if he's ever really hurt or not, because he's going to fake non-injuries.
Yeah, yeah. That's just, but we're to the point now where, like, that's just part of the package.
But
right?
I believed it. Did you guys believe it when he couldn't? I don't know. Well, I did believe.
Yes,
I was like,
I did,
oh
for
no.
A second. And Twitter did too. Twitter was going, yeah. Like, losing their minds. They're like, oh no, not torn, whatever. Quentin Grimes, quality basketball player, gentlemen. I think I'm pretty happy with who he is. Is he, you don't
tell
like
me,
him?
Tell me about that. Head shake there.
I'm not sure about him. I think he's good to have on the team. Don't get me wrong. I think he's good to have on the team. I'm just not sure. It's early. It's four games. How he fits, where he fits. Is he going to be a playoff rotational guy? Because you get down to eight guys in the playoffs. Yep. Can he be, to your point, I don't know. Can he be one of your eight? I don't think so. But it's four games in. He's trying to find his way on a new team. He played for the worst team, the Pistons, when he got traded from the Knicks. He didn't fit in with Jalen Brunson-led Knicks. He fit in before Jalen Brunson. So Jalen Brunson, he doesn't handle the ball as much as Luka,
right.
But he does handle the ball a lot in New York. He did not fit in that well with that team. So he's coming to a team that is even more dominant with one person having the ball. So I wonder, I'm not opposed to Quentin Grimes. I like that the Mavericks picked him up. I'm just trying to still keep seeing how does he eventually fit in, or do we get to, we're a long way from this, mid-March, and we just go, oh, okay, like, I get it. Najee Marshall, Maxi Kleba, and Lively are your main three off the bench. I don't know. It's
Kleba's available. I guess what I was watching, I saw a dude that looked comfortable in the offense, and he looked comfortable defensively. So the comfort
high energy.
He's Josh Green.
Yeah,
but I feel like he's more skilled than Josh Green, and he looks a lot calmer. Like Josh Green, high energy, but just looks frantic.
I wanted to see if I could run through a couple like quick hit some what's real, what's not, big picture NBA things for you. I got a few, and we can stop on whichever one interests you. Well, is this real or is it not? The Nuggets are in
Nuggets
trouble.
Nuggets are real, yes.
Oh, okay. No, the Nuggets are real, but the Nuggets are in trouble. I know they won last night in overtime against Brooklyn. This just feels... Like
we might only have one question, because I feel like this is a 2 to 5 minute conversation.
Jokic is first or second in all major categories, and they are eking by teams that it feels like they would normally beat. I think they're going to have a long season.
Okay.
Still a playoff team, but a long season.
When you say playoff team, top six?
I don't know if I think that anymore.
7-10 isn't real playoffs until you win the play-in.
Then... to your point, I don't know if I think that anymore.
Ooh, wow, that's your favorite player, too.
I do like Nikola Jokic a lot.
Yeah. I think they figure out how to be the 4, 5, or 6 seed.
Okay. All right.
So, but winning the playoffs, I think they're in trouble for making a playoff run.
Okay. What say you? Real trouble?
Yes.
For the Nuggets?
Yeah, I think it's real trouble because, I was talking about earlier before the season, Murray, I'm kind of skeptical on his where he is right now still. And Jokic isn't the only thing that can keep that thing running. So, yeah, I think it's real.
Then one more quick one for you. the Lakers could actually be legit this go-round. Meaning, I'm kind of swapping them out a little bit in terms of, I could see Denver falling into the play-in, and I wonder what you think about the prospects of the Lakers just making the playoffs straight up. I know they lost to Phoenix, but close game.
I think Anthony Davis's health is always a concern, and he has to lead that team. The other thing, too, is come playoff time, LeBron can't play all of them in Orlando with days off. I think he's great, but at his age, I don't think he can handle 18 to 20 playoff games with the travel and everything and be the guy we saw in the Olympics or be the guy that we saw in Orlando for the play-in thing. I think that's a lot on a 41-year-old, 22nd year in the NBA for a playoff run. But could they get a top six seed? If Anthony Davis stays healthy for 82 games, I'm not saying play all 82, say yes.
Let's say he goes to add on to that. Let's say he plays 70 games. Can he really, really be in the MVP conversation?
Yeah, energy. It's the energy he's getting from having Bronny on that team. That's what the whole team's feeling it right
has
now.
Has Bronny played since
I think all of them might know they can be replaced by Bronny at any time. So they're playing at their highest level right now.
The thing that you said. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's go next up and scout the Falcons right here on 105.3 The Fan.
Empty backfield. And the throw wide open for the touchdown, Drake London. What a start for Atlanta.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. And in about an hour, we got Trey Wingo coming up on the program right now. Wanted to scout the Falcons, and since we played a Drake London clip, he has obviously become the team's number one receiving option, leads the team with 48 catches, which is tied for fourth best in the league, and 525 receiving yards. Probably more important, though, he has 5 touchdowns, which through 8 games is a lot. This shows some of the problems the Falcons have had in the last couple of years. 5 touchdowns is already his career high.
Nice. Good for him.
Yes. Good for him. Bad for previous Falcons. When you look at Drake London on the outside, Corey, how big of a concern is that? Because I know we're going to get to Bijan Robinson, and I understand all the concerns that come along with that. But Drake London, what do we see there?
More than anything, trust from Kirk Cousins. When I'm watching him throw, he looks as comfortable in this offense as he did in the Vikings offense. Actually, he probably looks more comfortable in it because he's not asked to move. He's just like, they're trying to get the ball out quickly because he's not going to run around. Like Dak, Dak's not going to run around and start getting the ball out quickly. Start planning some other things that get the ball into the receiver's hands so they can do the running. But that's what they've done a lot of. And then, you know, the addition of what Pitts is, you know, Pitts is pretty good. Mooney's pretty good. They have some dudes on that roster that they're doing a good work with. So, the Drake London connection, though, he is moved all over the place. He's outside, inside, wherever, and Kirk Cousins looks completely confident that he's going to make the play.
Kirk Cousins, 3rd in the league.
It's a day game, too.
Okay, he is kind of broken away from that stigma. Daniel Jones is fully taken over that. He's like, He can't win no matter what. That is a good point.
I feel like you should play those games at 1 a.m. so nobody watches him play.
He's got a shot. But Kirk Cousins, 3rd in the NFL with 2,100 passing yards, has a 68.3 completion percentage. His 14 touchdowns are tied for 5th in the league. He has, however, and this is something that obviously we've been critical of Dak thus far in terms of, Dak has 8 interceptions. That is way too many. Just 1 fewer than he had all last year.
Do you mind if, go ahead and finish that. I want to ask you a question about
Kirk Cousins has 7. So if you're looking for an opportunity to flip the field, flip the game in the air, the beginning of the season would say that is going to be made available to you.
Three of those, I believe, were in the very, very poor game he had.
That is true.
2 weeks ago.
Correct.
Very poor game where we laughed about it. But my question about Dak is his interceptions, do you think those are coming from just being poor at the position, or do you think it's because he's trying to make something happen because of where they are?
I thought the first one in the last game was a case of trying to make something happen where it just wasn't there. Look, you saw me yesterday. I inhaled and leaned back in my chair when Mickey said that Dak got hit and that's what led to the first interception. I fundamentally disagree with mm-hmm. that. I think he might have gotten hit, but he was hit at the end of his throwing motion, where I thought the impact was not super big.
He's also throwing against the wind.
Like, into double coverage where the safety was all over that.
Yeah, like there is a lot that went into just Bosa caused that. That was a stupid decision.
And the other one, see, I thought he was trying to play a little like, I got to make something happen because our offense stinks there. Is the second one, I just don't think he saw it at all.
First one, too. Wasn't that near, like, in the 5-yard line or something like that?
Yes.
Maybe that's the old Tom Brady. This is a punt, guys. I'm just going to throw it up in the air.
Hold for pass interference.
Put them in a bad spot.
I think the question's a good question, but it's like 100% pie. It's not just one thing that's causing these. There's multiple things, and then you have to just decide what's the main reason, what's the other reasons. I think lack of separation from the receivers is causing balls to get tipped, or for guys to, like, I have to throw it. This is the most open Jalen Tolbert gets. This is the most open Turpin gets.
I don't have much time because my offensive line's not going to be there.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot that goes into I think at this point, the below average season Dak is having. I know they said average before
the last game. I think he would admit
that.
I don't think that's unfair.
I guess I'm going to go back to when you were talking about Drake, London, and Pitts and everything. Here's my question. You guys have watched a lot more Cowboys football than I have this year. Is this last game, Kittle killed the Cowboys.
Yep, sure did.
I know I'm going back to the box score. I was surprised. Laporta only had one catch for 52 yards, and it was a touchdown. Do they look at Pitts and go, oh, this is the game because they literally don't have a human who can cover tight ends? I'm throwing that out as you talked about the weapons and you talked about the wide receivers, and then we know Bijan and then Pitts, but do teams now look at the Cowboys and go, our tight end, if we have a good one, can get 100 yards on this team?
I think that is an intriguing question. The reason why it comes at the worst time to go up against Atlanta is Atlanta in the second half, the second quarter of the season, they have figured out how they want to use Pitts. You look at those first four games, 8 catches. So you're like, oh yeah, great. Last 4 games, 21 catches. So they have been more direct while they're still getting London the ball. You talked about all the receiving options. They've been more direct at getting Kyle Pitts the ball. And so when you go against the combination of, ooh, we're going to have some trouble guarding those tight ends. That is a bad time for the Cowboys.
You know, San Francisco early in that game got a one-on-one with Kendricks, and Kendricks got beat. And I was like, oh crap, they're going to target him the rest of the night. And I didn't feel like they did the same thing, like trying to set up that one-on-one. But then when you add Bijan Robinson's ability to catch out of the backfield or Pitts, like those are great options. I did not know this though. Darnell Mooney has 12 20-plus yard catches this year.
Is that right?
Everybody else that can be considered like a receiver on the team has 2. Kyle Pitts has 5, but Darnell Mooney has 12. That's a concern because he can blow up in this one because Diggs is going to be probably covering London as much as possible.
That.
And then whenever, you know, I don't know who you're going to have on the other side. Israel Mukwamu, is that going to be your other cornerback? So this is a scary one for the secondary because they do have a lot of different options offensively.
It's only Wednesday. What do you guys have a percentage? Maybe it's Mickey who can tell us that Bland is going to play this week. Is it down? Is it 20%? Is it 80%? I don't know.
I thought I was closer to 85-90% last week.
More and more we hear about this, and more it sounds like that setback was like
a month setback.
Yeah, I don't know how long, but like a real setback as opposed to let's just be cautious with it. And I have the same concerns about Micah as well. I think we'll learn more this afternoon and then each day, because even Steven on Monday is like, I'm not sure.
I will say, talking to a doctor, the DeMarcus Lawrence injury, when it happened, they told me that is a tough injury to come back in season.
And he has a history of struggling coming back from that specific
injury. So, like, if you're thinking about DeMarcus Lawrence, I'm just throwing it out there. Obviously, I'm not the doctor. I only talk to some to get an idea, and they felt like that injury when it happened, and then the diagnosis of it was an injury that they felt he was probably not going to be able to come back from in season. If he does, then it would be really tough to be the same guy to come back in season with that injury.
This is where I'm fascinated. I wish I would have asked Steven this question. Are they counting on him to be back at some point this season and making an impact? Because me personally, I'm probably not.
I think it's Steven Jones. I think he has to answer that yes, because there's so much time left and he doesn't want to ruin hope. Look, hope is fading tremendously with the fan base. And so I don't think they can answer any of those questions honestly.
That's fair.
Because they want to give you the hope that everybody's coming back. And if we can hang in there, Bland and Lawrence and Parsons and Cooks and, you know, name a few other guys that I'm forgetting, but that they're all going to be back and we are all going to be awesome.
There's two things that I hope happens this weekend. One, that all the guys that are lashing out at the media or whoever else realize that's not the right place to put that energy, and they turn it around into their study and their work to get ready for the game. Not saying they don't. I'm just saying that now, you know what? Ramp it up. The media doesn't need to be the one that you're getting upset with in this situation. We're just seeing what we see and talking about it. But then that part of Mike Zimmer's defense just has not looked like whole yet.
Sure.
And obviously some players missing and everything, but if they can look like a team, a defense that looks like they have a clue, that looks like they are starting to come into form, because it does, it is a change. Maybe they don't even have the personnel to do what they did from last year to this year.
Jerry admitted that, right? Yeah. He finally did. It's just crazy, you know, how he is, but he is who he is.
But if he says
they're all in, everything's great, and then you get 5 weeks into the season, he's like, well, we didn't give Zim the guys that he needs to be successful.
Yeah.
Like, then you, yeah, and you know where he's saying that, because he has no clue who's on his football team. He's saying that because in the meetings they're telling him, Zim is telling him, this is what I want to do. This is what I would have done, but I do not have the right defensive tackles or linebackers or safeties, whatever it is, where Zim's like, this guy does not fit what I'm trying to do, and you guys don't want me to do what Dan Quinn did.
Yeah.
So what do I do here with a player who's not capable of doing this because he's not physical enough to do it?
But if they can start looking like they have they're getting what Zimmer's trying to get them to do, then that could probably that could turn everything around. Offense still has to figure something out. They got to score points. You're going to have to, you're going to have to score 30 in this game, probably? Like, you're going to have to score points.
I could see that. And you're desperately going to need more separation.
Yeah.
And you're going to need this. And I don't think it's going to happen the rest of his life. You're going to need Dak to be athletic. I think that ankle is, it's not done, but it is close to a 40-year-old ankle rather than a 30-year-old ankle. And he's done moving. I mean, when you're wearing boots in the off season because you're going on a fishing trip, like, that's not just for fun. That is because something's wrong. I mean, let's just be logical.
Jerry said he's not willing to risk Dak running more.
And
so,
let's be logical about it. If this offseason we see Jacob deGrom in an elbow brace, it's not just for preventative measures. It's because something is hurting him in his elbow and they need to stabilize it or not have it move. And so I do think for Dak, you're watching a young 30-year-old be more like an old 30-year-old. So this is going to be the difficult thing to overcome, not only this year, but for the next 3 to 4 years, is you have more of a Vinny Testaverde, Drew Bledsoe, Danny White, if you're old enough to remember this. He moves more like that than he does the Dak Prescott you were used to.
Now, I had a fun fact to throw out for you, because I'm not going to lie, I do not remember this player at all. Bijan Robinson, I remember him, has 1,522 rushing yards in his career. He's the second fastest Atlanta Falcon to reach 1,500 yards. He took 25 games. Williams Andrews did it in 23 games in the 1979 and 1980 season.
I wasn't
season.
Alive, Kevin.
For the Falcons.
How would I know?
I know. I like the look on your alive. Face because the look on Corey's face was the same way I felt when I read that name. And I was like, who the crap in hell is that? So Williams Andrews, two S's, kind of throws me off there, set the bar, and Bijan Robinson following it.
Wow.
We're the KNC Masterpiece. You're welcome. Right here on 105.3 The Fan. That's a different person. Oh. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bastard.
We still have baseball and a rumor DeGrom to the Yankees this offseason.
What?
We talk about it next.
New York kid. Bases loaded, two out. Breaks the ball. Deep left field. Volpe with redemption.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 through the Fan. In case you missed the promo, your last chance to grab a Flagtober 2024 Flag G-Bags live broadcast today, 2 to 7 p.m. at the Whataburger, State Highway 161 in Grand Prairie, right in front of the Walmart Supercenter. Your opportunity to go grab a flag today in Grand Prairie. Now,
yeah,
time for Baseball Nuggets.
Did you guys think it was over in the first inning? I
yes.
don't know if you were, if you weren't
yeah.
watching, if you're listening and you're not really following baseball, Freddie Freeman, history last night. In his first at bat, in the fourth game of the World Series, he hits another home run. He has a home run in every game in the World Series. Not only that, his last two games in Atlanta when they won the World Series, he hit a home run. So he has six straight World Series games with a home run. The best I can put it to you, if let's say you're a basketball fan and you're listening, thank you, and you're not a baseball fan, this would be Luka going for 50 points for six straight games in the playoffs. Or Michael Jordan. Freddie Freeman's not the greatest player ever. He's probably a Hall of Famer. Like, he's going to be on that, like, maybe not
first
ballot.
Do you think this pushes it over the hump? Because he's about to add World Series MVP.
Yeah, I do think this helps. And he probably has, I'm going to guess, three more years left. Yeah. He's going to be on that deal where he doesn't get 3,000 hits. He doesn't get 500 home runs. He probably gets 400 home runs and 2,500 hits.
Yeah.
More Fred McGriff-like.
Okay.
But
does he need to help with a instructional baseball video or anything, you think, to really lock it
maybe
in?
Maybe he goes the Frank Thomas route. She's going to like it too. You know, I don't know.
You know what we're saying, right, Corey?
I do.
But it was an unbelievable start to the game. So Freddie Freeman hits a two-run homer, and you're like, it's over. I can't believe it. But they're going to beat the Yankees again, and then I'll get to the bottom of the first if you have a comment.
No, yeah, I thought it was over in part two because of the staggering World Series sweep statistics that you told us yesterday. Yeah. And I was like, wow. So Freddie Freeman's going to make this the easiest selection for World Series MVP maybe ever. Yeah. And they are going to wipe them out.
Yeah. And then to start the bottom of the first, if you're not watching, Gleyber Torres hits a shallow fly ball down the right field line. And I do think this. John Smoltz did a great job of explaining this. He said, how many times has Juan Soto had turned balls into doubles and triples in this series? Freddie Freeman, for example. Yeah. There's other examples. And how many times has Mookie Betts turned doubles and triples into singles because of how great he is defensively in the outfield? Like, Juan Soto doesn't get to that ball at all to start the game. Mookie Betts gets to the ball, makes a really nice catch. And if you didn't see it, he catches the ball. And a second after catching the ball, because his glove goes into the stands, a Yankee fan rips his glove open and then tries to take the ball out.
And then the guy next to him grabs his throwing hand.
Yeah. They are like...
so stupid.
It was so New York Yankee fan-ish. And obviously the umpire sees it. He calls the batter out. Those guys get ejected from the game.
Because of course they do.
Did you guys see on Twitter how much those tickets were at least, I don't know if reselling for, but how much that row, like somebody looked it up on that row on StubHub or Vivid Seats or whatever it is, the one you did commercials for.
Game time. $3,000?
$1,400 before taxes and fees. So I don't know if those were season ticket holders or not, but if they paid the secondary price, that was over $3,000 for both of those tickets.
Okay.
Yikes.
But worth it, right?
No.
Yes, it
not
was.
At all.
Everybody in the city loves you.
It didn't count.
There's a feature on ESPN right now. There's a feature on it. They did a whole story about this. And they went to a bar afterwards, and everybody was like, yeah, we love you guys. And they're going to be just fine. And you have that story to tell forever. I almost ripped off Mookie Betts' arm.
And we lost a series in 5 games. is that going to be your story?
I don't know.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of money, Kevin.
That's a lot of money.
I'll tell you what, it will be interesting tonight, real quick, and then we'll get to the Jacob DeGrom rumor, is – you do have the game one starters here. You have Gerrit Cole versus Jack Flaherty. And
I would think advantage Yankees.
Yankees are -150 tonight. Yeah. That is a pretty heavy favorite in a World Series game. I think last night it got down to like -120 for the Yankees. They were still a slight favorite. You had the bullpen day for the Dodgers. They don't have to do that again. That's always tough to accomplish because everybody out of your pen, for the most part, has to be on their game. And I have the box score pulled up so I can have it here. Boy, Honeywell was getting hammered at the end. Like I thought, I'm going to be honest. I thought this game is not over. They brought in their closer early, Weaver, the Yankees, and I'm thinking. Now the tough thing is can you turn the lineup over? It was 6-4 going into the bottom of the eighth. Once that they scored the, I believe, 5 runs in the eighth inning, and Gleyber Torres hit the big homer. Yeah, then it was over. But I was thinking going into the eighth inning. I'm like, this game is not over. Especially, I felt like the bottom of the order has come through for the Dodgers in this series. You've mentioned the shortstop, Edmund coming through. And so I was like, this isn't over until they scored the 5 runs in the eighth inning. And then it was completely over. So we move on to tonight. There will be a game 5. And the Yankees are favored. And it's weird because I was rooting for the Yankees early in the game. But then as the game gets later, I started finding my just heart rooting for the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I need another game. I'm not supposed to be rooting for the Dodgers to come back, you know? So we get another one tonight, but I found this very interesting. This is from sportingnews.com. And here's the headline. I saw this weekend and getting to it now. Rangers could trade Jacob DeGrom to Yankees amid payroll cut.
You can go ahead and turn your mic off now.
I had not heard that.
It says the Rangers failed to reach the postseason after winning the World Series. The Dallas Morning News suggests that general manager Chris Young is looking to shed payroll. The Rangers have $170 million payroll next season. According to Spotrac, Jacob DeGrom has a big contract, and the Rangers could be looking to move him or deal him, it says. And it says the Yankees would be a team or could be a team interested. Trading DeGrom would achieve the goal of shedding payroll and allow the Rangers to retain players to help them bring back some of the 2023 World Series team. Now, I guess what they're saying is guys like Nathan Eovaldi, maybe Andrew Heaney. I'm trying to name key free agents that they would maybe want to bring back. Or guys that weren't part of the team, I'm pretty sure they want to bring Kirby Yates back.
I think they
wouldn't mind bringing back David Robertson, but I think that there's this feeling that he might retire completely and just retire from baseball. So, here's the deal. I do not believe that this is true. I understand where the Sporting News writer is coming from. He's putting pieces together here. Evan Grant of the Dallas Morning News writes that they have to shed payroll. They have a budget that is going to be a much more strict budget than even last year. And I will say this, if you're mad about this, just let me try to explain this a little bit. And you don't have to like this, but this is the truth. If they go over the luxury tax again, they're taxed 50% on their payroll. So it becomes a very big check. Where the Dodgers, look, I believe the Dodgers and Yankees, if I have their TV contracts right, they make somewhere per year $300 to $500 million a year. I'll give you the best that Bally's was paying was $110 million a year when the Rangers felt like they could go get Seager and Semien and DeGrom and Eovaldi and Gray. That was $110. So when the Dodgers are paying these luxury taxes, when the Yankees are paying these luxury taxes, they were still 3 to 5 times more making money local TV market than the Rangers ever did on the really, I would say, beneficial TV contract when Bally's and Fox Sports were paying their money. So I don't think this is true because the Rangers have rehabbed Jacob deGrom. He is healthy. He is going to have, as far as we know today, a healthy offseason. He is going to come to spring training prepared to have a normal spring training to be your opening day starter for the Texas Rangers. I don't think they did all of that. Paid him 2 years of salary where they've gotten nine games out of him.
I gotcha.
To do this. And the thing is I don't think another team will be willing to take on the 3 years and all of the money with him throwing a few games in September. I'm pretty sure that they'd be like, you're giving us a major pay cut here. Like we will pay. I'm going to be generous here. We'll pay 70% of the contract.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you'd get that from another team right now. I think the Rangers look at DeGrom as he has a chance to win the Cy Young.
And they've already put in the work.
Yeah, they put in the work to rehab him. Here's the other thing that I don't know. I did not look into this before doing this deal. If Jacob DeGrom has a no-trade clause, which I bet he has at least a partial no-trade clause, there's no way he's going back to New York. He loves the media here. It's taken him a while to understand who we are, and we're not New York media. We will not treat him the way that New York has treated him and continues to treat him. He's not going back to the Mets or the Yankees. He wants nothing to do with that environment. So could he be traded? I'll throw out a 10%. He could be traded. I won't put that it's 100%. But if he has a no-trade clause, there's no way that he would agree to going to the Yankees, or I would even say back to the Mets, the way that the media has treated him and has continued to treat him. I want to just put your mind at ease if you're a big Jacob deGrom fan and you want to watch him pitch for the Rangers next year. I'm 90% sure he's going to be with the Rangers in spring training.
So I'm not going to lie, that tease you threw out there kind of freaked me out because I hadn't heard that.
It's from the Sporting News. It's not like from some random thing.
Yeah.
I read you, it's not a long article. I just don't think. Now, the Rangers are going to limit his innings. That will be more in the offseason. They only want him to throw 130 to 150 innings this upcoming season. So that means they're going to skip some starts of his, and they're going to, you know, hopefully he doesn't go on the injured list, but they are going to be cautious with him throughout the season to limit his innings after not pitching pretty much for 2 years. And if you do have a playoff run in you, they need him healthy for the playoff run.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we will talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnola. Plus, we'll throw in a little My Buddy's an Idiot next on The Fan.